Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, where I'm latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, it may be the Queen's birthday holiday, but Edwin and I are still here, and Edwin, we're going to have an interesting conversation. There's so much going on.
Martin, happy Queen's holiday birthday to you, and I hope you're having a great holiday.
Well, actually, I've been jolly busy today. I've had people phoning me up and wanting information about this, that and the other. Oh, there's a lot of uncertainty out there.
Look, a lot of uncertainty, but one of the things though is today's Queen's birthday brought back some memories of I think it was 1977 when the Sex Pistols released God Save the Queen in the 25th Jubilee birthday or whatever it was, and I think those lyrics of God Save the Queen are profound, and they're just as profound in for today as they were for 1977, Mike. What do you think?
Well, you've made some minor tweaks, I see, right? You know, things like God Save the Hedonic and God Save the Property Market and God Save the Auction Clearance Rates. But hedonics popped up quite a few times.
We're the future. God Save the Auction Clearance Rates. We mean it, man. We love our hedonics. God Save the Queen. Profound, mate. Absolutely profound.
Right. Well, you know, there is a very interesting thematic going on at the moment where people are beginning to have their doubts about the property market. But, of course, the spruikers are still out there. And it's interesting. I think you can measure the fear by how loud the spruikers are getting.
Well, look, it is. And that's what we're going to be talking about a little bit tonight. We're going to, it's cold and windy out there, but, there's going to be power shortages. And I think there's going to be a lot of power shortages at auctions as well, moving forward from what we're noticing already, what you're noticing. Some might say it's a lukewarm market, sometimes frosty or, unpredictable is what I'm calling at the moment, as we've spoken about the Adeline sales that we're going to be around. Mm. The biggest question that I have, Martin, is what will vendors do moving forward with more and more reports, on social media, call it, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all these posts, what agents are saying, the narrative that's now being conveyed to the vendors. The big question for me is, will they remove the listings off market to come back and fight another day, preferably at around the end of spring, in summer when there'll be hope that the international borders are open and cashed up individuals are going to come in. That's why I'm we're keeping a very, very close eye on the numbers and what people are saying. But on top of that, we're also going to be talking about the state of the economy. Even Robert Kiyosaki is picking up on what we were talking about 18 months ago, Martin. We said 18 months ago, you can't eat gold, you can't eat silver or bricks and mortar, but that's storing away, putting away the sardine cans, tuna cans, and baked bean cans, and now Robert Kiyosaki's onto it. I'm sure he's watching our shows now. For sure, I'm convinced.
Well, he has watched a few of our shows, actually. I know that for a fact because he's commented on it a few times. So there you go. And you're right. We were saying this 18 months ago, and planting carrots and growing your own stuff and be prepared for a very bumpy ride. And that's what we're having at the moment. It is going to be a bumpy ride. And if people think that the worst is over, they're kidding themselves. I made a post today and I was highlighting the 20% increase in basic groceries in the Illawarra in the last 3 months, according to a newspaper report. This is big stuff. This is fundamental cracks actually appearing. And by the way, a crypto bank's just fallen over while we're literally today. So wherever you look, you can't eat crypto, you can't eat silver, you can't eat gold, but you can eat tuna.
No, look, you can. And this is something that we just go back and say, recall what we were saying years ago. We said that 2020 was 2019. We were when the market was turning, and then 2020 came along, and the lockdowns and everything else rescued a lot of the their small business operators rescued real estate industry, as far as I'm concerned, because a lot of them were already struggling with the slow volume, the small amount of sale volumes that were happening through the offices. But we said 2021 was going to get bad, was going to be really bad, but 2022 was really going to be where it was going to start. But we talked about the WeChat chatters, what they were doing, what the central government were telling them what to do 18 months ago to prepare for famine, prepare for war. A lot of it was already being put out there, and a lot of the warning signs have been put out there, which we've been talking about, and how the appetite for different types of properties were shifting rapidly. We caught this the shifting sands early in 2020 as the lockdowns started moving in February, towards the talking about lockdowns and the coronavirus was taking a grip of the world. We were already talking about the future of open house inspections. If you recall, we were laughed at. I was laughed at the fact that there was wearing masks and doing all sorts of things. I mean, all in the way, in the light, humorous way to get the message across. But then all of a sudden, it became the norm to the point where the powers to be, they took a hold of it and started controlling communities, cities, countries, and the whole world. The rich got richer, and the poor are getting poorer, and the middle class are disappearing.
Exactly right, and it's more of the same now. Interest rates rising. Interest rates are going to go rise probably higher, faster, and more bigger steps than people expected. The inflation from the US was much stronger than people expected. People have been hoping that it might have tapped out, but no, it's growing higher from this point. That means they're going to have to put the rates up when they meet later in the week. That's going to have a significant flow on into Australia. The RBA is going to be forced to put the rates up. And, everywhere you look, it's a painful, painful story. And as you said, we were talking about this a long time ago. I guess the question now is, how does it play ahead? Because now the next 6 to 12 months, I think, are going to be really, really interesting.
Look, they are, Martin, and it's, and as I said, in terms of the prices, in terms of between you and I and those that are watching, it's an interesting scenario moving forward. It's going to there's obviously definitely going to be a lot of mortgage stress, and we've talked about that at length. Cost of living is getting more and more expensive. One of the biggest questions that I have in the back of my mind on a weekly basis is how are people coping? What are they doing without? We know that the perks, the toys, the speedboats, all the extra, the motorbikes and all those other toys that they may have laying around and so forth. Yeah, they're going. They're definitely going to be going in order to put food on the table in to keep a roof over their heads. Because obviously, with every 50 basis point rise on a million, that's $265 extra dollars that they have to come up with a month in order to, to keep the mortgage. The ones that I really feel for, Martin, are the ones that came into the market. The first home buyers that came into the market in over the last 18 months. They really got sold the lemon, and we were warning them about these so-called these government gifts and all these talks about how it was wonderful, how they something like 267,000 took up those government-backed loans with the subsidy, call them subsidies, call it what you will, but it's those government-backed mortgages that are really going to be a huge anchor that's just going to be strangling the mortgage holders, particularly as the interest rates keep on rising.
Yeah, the word you were searching for was bribe. Right. First home owner bribes. That's what it was. It was basically a way of just trying to prop everything up. And I still remember Michael Sukkar 2 or 3 years ago, you know, when he was the guy in charge of property in Australia, absolutely spruiking these loans and saying, never been a better time to buy, you know, buy now, buy now. I mean, if that wasn't financial advice, I don't know what is.
Yeah, a lot of these people that, you know, we bag the real estate agents to give financial advice and make all sorts of claims in their advertising. But what about politicians? I mean, and look, and I recall at the beginning of those reports that Sukkar put out, we called them and said, like, yeah, please show us your, we tweeted out, we put it out on Twitter, yeah, show us your financial planning license. But
exactly.
They get away with a lot of stuff, and now the people are going to be suffering. And again, these are the people that basically came into the market with anything above the 90% LVRs, or in layman's terms, anybody that came in with only a 5% deposit, or best case scenario, came in with a 10% deposit. Because they're the first to go. Because once you add it all up, it almost comes to almost 100% borrowing by the time you include everything else and all the other costs that are in there. Because at the end of the day, that 20% loan, it's still going to be called on. It's still going to be called upon. In a lot of days. When will the banks call it, or when will the government call it? Is a wait and see moment, but there's going to be a lot of carnage in that space moving forward. I'm sad to say.
I think you're right, and one of my observations here is that people were still relying on the bank, basically doing the work in terms of affordability. You know, because they were conscious of the bank's 3%. Buffer, you know, well, if the bank says I can have the money, then it must be fine. But of course, the basis on which they calculate that is nothing like the cost base of most households because of all the inflationary pressures we've had. So we've got people who are already very, very close to the wind before all these rate rises come through. So this is not good. And as you say, a lot of people, you know, the 95% LVR mob and all those things, doesn't take much to tip them over. This is not good at all.
No good at all. And I mean, those lyrics come back to mind. And I mean, I guess the bank managers are sitting, the head honchos are sitting pretty, because when there's no future, how can there be sin? Famous words from God Save the Queen.
Absolutely. So, well, it's good words. Now, what about this WeChat chatter stuff? Because it is fascinating what's going on over in China, isn't it? Now, I mean, it's interesting that they are really. Well, they're trying to stoke the economy. They're taking rates down. They're trying to encourage people to borrow more. They're trying to engineer a whole bunch of financing for the property sector. In the meantime, the property sector goes down the girdler.
Well, the people that they're trying to encourage or coax to buy into the market, they're basically giving the middle finger to the central government, and they're saying no way, Jose, you can whistle Dixie, but we are not. Whilst there is no future. Whilst there's no job security, we just simply won't buy. And don't forget that's the 12 trillion yuan that the central government, particularly earmarked, was to protect or hedge the property industry, the property sector. Nothing else. Not for any future infrastructure. It was purely for development and helping and assisting people buy the. Principal place of residence, but the younger people that they've got this huge movement of being the last generation. They're just basically saying, you can go whistle Dixie. We're not taking this. We're not taking this up. And that sort of in the last couple of weeks, when I first shared that on the rant, Martin. After that, I've been thinking, as I talk to young people, family and friends, the children of friends that are of that age that could be looking for property or could be saving to look for property, it's almost like they're starting to take up the same mantra. I mean, what for?
Yep.
What for? What if there's no security of a job, no security of a future, they feel that they, in a way, that they could be the last generation in the Western world as well.
Yeah, there is a little bit of that sort of feeling that we're turning to a different epoch. And as a result of that, people are making or not making decisions. They're not actually just going to dance the same old tune. And I'd argue that something similar is happening in other places too, like the US, for example. This is becoming quite widespread. And it's interesting, of course, Biden's rating is way down, his popularity rating. He's got the midterms ahead. He's talking about inflation, but inflation's going higher and higher. And again, there's the same issue that people are saying, well, hang on a moment, in this environment, we're not going to play that old game anymore.
Look, I look. Here's a word of wisdom for the president and the third in charge. I don't know whether Kamala Harris likes ice cream, but look, if they keep the cost of ice cream down, because I know that Pelosi and Biden, I know they love their ice cream. If they keep the cost of ice cream down, I'm sure the economy will be great. I mean, that's just putting it out there, mate. Just putting it out there.
Yeah, I think it may need a bit more than ice cream because the cost of housing continues to rise, as well as, of course, the $5 per gallon in the US is horrendous. They're not used to anything like that. I mean, it's
No,
just it's
that's two what that's $5. Well, that's on average. I mean, some parts are already over the $6.
yeah.
That's US, and what's that? 2 liters of 2 liters in a gallon. So that'll bring you to more of an idea as to what they're paying. But like you said, they're not used to paying those sort of dollars. And now you've also got which what we sort of were talking about a little bit before the rant was potential power shortages, outages. They're going into the summer. We're walking into outages in what's it, in Queensland. They're calling them at the moment. Potentially, we're going to see them in Victoria as well, and that could be one of the reasons why. As we're going to talk on the numbers segment, as to why the auction numbers are skyrocketing in Victoria once again, and they're taking the lead. Are people's Yeah, maybe people wanting to get out. They don't see a future in that state. So it's there's a lot of pressure all around the world, locally. But then there's you got the stories as well in the WeChat chatters over in that are eye catching, and that then you've got public officials, in the from the police force, the girlfriend. The girlfriend's property gets raided. Now, I'm led to believe it's 1 billion yuan, but I'm not sure. So let's just go halfway. Let's just go to 500 million. Was stashed in a house. The girlfriend of one of the senior public CCP officials in China. So, what does that mean? I mean, may not mean a lot to a lot of people, but look, the central government is putting a lot of pressure on their, in terms of investigating corruption, money laundering, which then again it has a ripple effect with our property market as well, with our economy, with what people can do, not only us but also similar in similar vein. You've got Canada as well because a lot of that corrupt money went over to Canada as well to buy properties. So now from that though, albeit there's a lot of pressure there to clamp down on this corruption, but there's also a greater push for digital currency, and that will have a greater impact as to who can leave the country, the reasons why they can leave the country, how they can leave the country, when they can leave the country, how much they can spend overseas, which impacts our economy, which impacts our property market because of tourism, students, high net worth individuals that would otherwise come, or as I've been saying, that they're already looking at ways to send the children, the wives, and the girlfriends overseas because of the tussle that's going on between Xi and Li at the moment, and you don't want to be on the wrong side of the fence over there. You don't want to be having backed the wrong horse and you're stuck over there because there's all sorts of ramifications moving forward. So all these things are playing out, which is really, really interesting, that it's going to have a huge effect. We're not going to know a lot of that, the outcome of that, till the end of the year, November sometime, as to who takes control. But at the moment, given what's been playing out, it's a 50-50. It's a 50-50 call. It's a tussle. But we'll keep our viewers up to date with what's happening with our power struggle. But one thing for sure, from both camps, families are trying to get out. And these are, the families and also backers of the different factions that are, immensely wealthy, Martin. So we're not talking about the middle class. We're not even talking about the upper middle class. We're talking about that 1% that are ultra wealthy, that have got means and ways to get out of the country and try to take as much of the money that before the digital currency comes into play.
Yeah, and I think your point about digital currency is very relevant, not just for China, but there are central bank digital currency developments in a number of Western countries now. The Treasury is looking at about this in Australia. The Federal Reserve has published a paper in the US. The Bank of England is looking at it because, of course, the thing about digital is it provides an extra level of control and direction. And I think in the current environment, where in fact they're pretty much out of control, at the moment, the economy and the central banks are really out of ammo. I think central bank digital currency will really swing into vogue and will be a focus for considerable intervention. And I would just simply say to people, watch for this because it's going to change the game once again, not in our favour, but in the favour of the 1%.
Yeah, and this is where I also come. We've been speaking about Musconomics, and even Elon Musk over the last few weeks, he's been really, not a lot, but he's been talking about how powerful WeChat is and the platform. And WeChat basically, the government controls the people through WeChat. You can do everything. It is a marvelous platform, but it's interesting how he's taken up that narrative, how he's taken up the chat. Recently about how powerful it is and what you can do, what can be done through it. So because it's almost like he's given that platform his approval, and obviously the Western world is going to try to emulate something similar to that because let's face it, they've been using it for a very long time and very very successfully, and going into a digital transition is not going to be that hard. So. It's a watch this space for us as well, as you say, Martin, because it's going to how long it would take to roll this out. Only the IT people would have a better call on that, but it's I very much doubted that it'll take a long time, given the fact that the governments and the elites' appetite to clamp our movement or to basically rid. Of the middle class, and mainly have the plebs to serve upon them, Martin.
Absolutely, and I'll make the other point, Edwin, and that is that with the fall in the value of crypto and the failure of a number of crypto entities, another crypto bank, as I mentioned, fell over today, what they're going to argue is that you can't rely on crypto because it's deregulated, it basically has no central control, that's a risk. People need to actually trust the central bank digital currency, which is going to be controlled by the government, et cetera, because that's going to be more secure and safe and it'll be more protected. So they're going to use all of the downside falls from the crypto world to justify their position with regard to central bank digital currency. But of course, we only get half the story and the control, and we'll know what you're doing and we'll be able to put money into an account that you then can spend X on but not Y on, ain't going to be part of the story.
Yeah, and if you don't toe the line, Martin, the power goes off.
Exactly right. Well, my power would have gone off quite some time ago. I think my social score with regard to the officials is somewhat low at the moment. But hey, we'll just carry on. Now, local chatter is also quite interesting, right? And they look as though they want bigger places because they're not going out to restaurants now. They're eating at home.
Well, look, it's an interesting look. It's been happening for a while, but the chatter right now, there's a lot more of it. So there's a bit more take up. And what it is a lot of restaurant owners and that basically they close the restaurants down and they just want to continue to make money. And obviously they want to. There are some people that that also chefs and restaurateurs that like to entertain and feed people, and they make money. So what they've got, what's happening, there's a lot more of, is you've got basically home dinner parties. But when you get invited to this home dinner party, it's not only by invitation, but it's also there's a cost per head, and in some places you can pay up to $1,000, Martin, to be pampered on the night. And so therefore, because they're obviously they don't have restaurants, they want to continue to make money, and they found this way. Now, obviously, you can find a cheaper places as well. You can, and just got to look around, and it's interesting. So it's really an intimate restaurant experience. When I say it's not really between you and your partner, or between you and your immediate family, because you could have two or three families there present, eating and taking part. So it's a nice social event. It is rather interesting. I figured I might try it out, kangaroo steak and go all the way.
And this mirrors the closing down of retail stores and selling out the garage, right? It's the same mode of operation, right? And the other one that I really like is this idea of you go and find a unit to rent in the right suburb so that you can get your kid into the right school, right? And you can basically make a bit of money on that too.
Yeah, and you sublet the unit. But it's really some of that chatter is, when I talk about it, is the fact that they're happy to go backwards $50, $60 in, in leasing it, subletting it a lot cheaper, and obviously not following the right right means and ways. Again, it's through the communities, and that's why they're able to do it, because otherwise, if you follow the legislation or the regulations, both the landlord would have to agree to you subletting it. So they're doing it all pretty much through WeChat, through in-house, and are able to get away with it. Look, some people, now you may think this is funny, or our viewers may think this is funny, but some people are actually not even re-letting these units out. They're using them as storage.
Right.
They're using them as storage, and also in one case, he's actually doing some hydroponics, but not the illegal stuff. He's actually growing vegetables in the unit, Chinese sort of vegetables. How they're dealing with it. My only thing about that is your periodic inspections, which is generally you get as a landlord or as an investor. You're able to do four inspections, one every 3 months. Now, look, I know that some property managers are very lazy, and they may only do one every 12 months, or one every 6 months. So that's one of the things of how to get around. But again, you go back to this whole community of renting. But if you're renting it through the WeChat platform, you're not really taking a proper bond. It doesn't go through the proper channels. It can be risky, but at the same level, it works. And it's really, really interesting. But in this case, as you mentioned, Martin, a lot of it is with this is the subletting or the letting of the official rental of an apartment is really to get your child into the selective school that is that's captured by the address.
Absolutely. And the other interesting thing about the local WeChat chat chatter is they really like Alan Kohler, right? He did a recent show on the ABC talking specifically about Phil Lowe last year saying no rate rise until 2024, and then of course rates are going up. But that has gone viral, hasn't it, on WeChat?
Yeah, look, it is, it has, and it's really, it's basically they're talking about taking it from the side of look at what the white men have done. Yeah, the Wailers have done, and now the ABC are now basically trying to trying to support all these people that got in and into the property arena. He talks about, you know, over 600,000 mortgages, 630,000 mortgages or so were taken up because of, or during this time that that lawyer was saying, you know, the rates won't be going up until 2024. So they took the advice that they punted on that, and they move forward and along the way. And this is why I also say that the ones that are going to be under a lot of pressure are going to be those 267,000 or 270,000 first home buyers that took on that those government grants in order to get into the market with very, very little deposits or very, very, very high LVR. So in the WeChat chatter platforms, they're talking more about the pressure and like because they are mainly investment groups, they're looking at future, in their words, you know, future bargains that could come moving forward once these families or these young people that took on these mortgages will come unstuck. But you know, I can see that happening, but not for the next 24 months, because it'll take a while to play, go from mortgage stress to mortgage delinquency. There's a decent period of time in between before we see the mortgage delinquencies and mortgagee in possessions, and more to the point that I've raised in the past, because the courts are also backlogged, so that extends that time frame as well. But there's a lot of pressure. But I mean, if you're under so much pressure, there will be people that will just simply, they'll take a hit, they'll take a loss, and get out, because they won't be able to cope with the pressure and the constant demands made by the banks and the institutions chasing them up on repayments.
Now, and this is interesting, because as I mentioned on a few previous shows, we know that more people who are in some financial difficulty at the moment are being whispered to by the banks and encouraged essentially to put their property in the market and to be able to sell the property, get out, repay the bank, right? Which means that they don't have to go down the foreclosure route, right? And I think, you've made a really important point again, that the foreclosure route is not quick, right? It's at least probably 2 years. In fact, you can probably even bump it out to 2 to 3 years. And in fact, in the US, there were foreclosures that were still hadn't happened 4, 5, 6 years after the event, right? These things take a long time to work through. But what banks are now doing is they're actually being a little bit more coy than that. And what they're doing is encouraging people to sell their property, get out, and, of course, pay off the bank without having to declare the property as in delinquency. And that means that they keep their numbers in the right place in terms of defaults, which means that they don't have to hold higher capital. And what they're doing is essentially putting a lot of moral pressure on households. And, not going to give financial advice here, but just it's worth trading off the moral pressure and taking a hit versus just, sweating it out, if you can sweat it out and see the way through and, understand how long the processes are around managing a delinquency, because you have to give notice periods and you have to do this and you have to do that, and it takes forever. So, yeah, I'm with you, Edwin. This isn't going to sort of all appear in the next 3 months. This is going to be over 2 to 3 years, and who knows where rates will be in 2 to 3 years' time. They may be lower again. I don't know. But it is very interesting just watching this all play out at the moment.
Yeah, look, it is. And the unfortunate thing, Martin, is that, on one side, we're going to have a Mexican standoff with a lot of these properties, people that are just going to basically dig their heels and then just, as you said, they're just going to, put up with it and maybe stretch it out for those 2, 3, 4 years. But then what happens, what generally happens historically, what I've seen and what I saw in the early 2000s and in the 90s was the carnage that this leaves behind, because that mortgage stress plays a huge impact, a huge role in the impact that happens on partnership split ups and marriage breakdowns. And that's the unfortunate thing. And these are the properties, the ones that are going to unravel a lot quicker than the ones that are going to be basically, like I said, having that Mexican standoff. Because the Mexican standoff at the moment, which is different to the early 2000s property downturn, is the fact that the rents are horrendously high, and the vacancy rate is super low. So, what do you do? But the thing that that all that this does is just boils that makes that brings that anxiety and frustration and family breakdowns to a greater boiling point, and it's a huge stain or blemish in the lack of policies that that have been handed down for the last 2, 3 decades in trying to look after the well-being of the young families of people wanting to have a principal place of residence as a residence, not as an investment.
Yeah, absolutely, and it is the social consequences that I think are very important. And some people will just find the pressure of the unknown so significant that they just want to sell and get out. And
That's
of
right.
course, the banks are saying, well, if you're going to sell and get out, you better sell now because prices are going to drop back. The banks are now forecasting maybe 20% falls over the next couple of years. So they are putting a lot of pressure on to say, if you're going to get out soon. It's just no easy answers, right? Because as you say, if you actually then get out of your property and manage to sell it, what do you do? Do you buy something else? Well, maybe if you've got any money left, but if you've paid out the bank with a small deposit to start with, plus all the transaction costs, you probably haven't got much left. And then if you get into the rental market is completely broken as well, and rents are going through the roof, and the rental stress is ever higher than it's been. So this is, as you say, policy failure, mega. Mega policy failure over 20, 30 years. And I have to say, the last 10 years under the conservative side of politics, they just wrecked it all and just said, well, leave it to the market. The market will sort it out. Well, my argument is no, the market has not sorted it out. It's created the problem.
Yeah, well, good as. And look, Martin, what's with this? You going around cricket fields?
Well, no, I know it's the wrong time of year for
I thought
cricket,
cricket
but
was yeah was in summer. Not auction crickets. What the hell is? I started reading your tweet and I'm thinking, what the hell is auction crickets? What the hell is Martin doing? But you're really spooking the Illawarra region, Martin. What's
Well,
going
you know,
on?
I had some visitors with me over the weekend, right? And we thought we'd go around and just visit a few auctions, right? Just to see what was going on. And I've done this for a few weeks, just covering quite a wide area because the auction is quite sparse around down here. But it's very interesting. We always go to look at houses rather than units. And so there were six that were meant to be scheduled, of which three were cancelled on the day. It didn't happen, right? Two had no bidders, so they actually turned up with auctioneer, right? And there's about sort of four neighbours and nobody buying, right? And there was one, which there was a bid, but I remember I told you the other week about this particular auctioneer and his heavy mob. Well, the heavy mob was there, and guess what? The heavy mob was bidding.
I'm telling you, Martin. I am telling you that we was it that Dummy Bidding Inc. We need to launch it. But now you've given me another great idea, Martin. So the Wiltshire Chatterers, the local Wiltshire Chatterers, are having dinner parties, and you pay per head. It's a head chat. Martin, you put it out there. We meet the people that want to come around and go to auctions with yourself. Look, let's charge $100 a head, and we take them along.
Guided tour, and you can visit all the auction sites. Yeah, interesting one.
Illawarra, and we get a live commentary by yourself. And if you pet the dogs, that's an extra $20. Right, we charge an extra $20. And if I take Dusty or Evan with me, and they wanna hold Dusty or Evan. Yeah, we'll charge you an extra $20 as well, mate.
Right, but the rooster's $50, right?
Money for jam.
And what's fascinating about all of this is that people, responded on Twitter saying, "Well, you haven't said that. You said that before." Well, yeah, I went out a couple of weeks ago, and guess what? Rather similar story, but it's more adverse this week. And then somebody else said, "Well, of course it was a long weekend, so of course there are no auctions." No, there were auctions. Still auction scheduled, right? And in fact, the CoreLogic numbers, the preliminary, which we know are fiction anyway, but those ones were down. So we know that the whole auction thing is now going as flat as a pancake.
Now, look, it is, and this is the whole thing. Looking at it, And as we get a lot of the stuff also from Parapower and other or the rest of the Twitterati on Twitter that go out and and talk about their experiences, it's you start putting it all together and you can see that there's a lot of the vendors are feeling the pain. And obviously moving forward, we're going to get a lot of agencies once again going back to that position where they were in 2019, where there's going to be a very low sales. And again, I'll say that real estate agents in the selling side of things don't make money when because the property market went up. They make money on the transactions, not so much that the fact that they got an extra $200,000 or $300,000 for their vendor. That the difference of the commission fee to get them an extra $100 or $200 is only a couple of thousand dollars, $2,000 to $3,000. So they're not making a lot more money. What keeps their machine going and operating is the transactions. And this is what I was saying before. My fear is that, not so much fear, but one of the things I keep an eye on is to see if people are going to be pulling the people that don't have to sell, that don't really need to sell, whether they're going to be pulling off market. But look, moving forward, all I can say is that if the numbers keep rising, it's because people want to sell, or they have to sell, or they must sell. And it becomes more and more a buyer's market than a vendor's market.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Parapower and the property at Douro, right? We should talk about that for a bit because this is really a fascinating story, right? And it's a highlight of you got to get to really understand what's going on in the local area to really decode what is really the story.
On the surface, it's really strange. Look, the power reported as the only bid, one and only bid, 2.5. My client that inspected the property, that they were originally guiding it above the 3 million, 3 to 3.2. My client said to the agent, not interested at that kind of money. We're not in that position. Then the agent called my client and said, "Look, we've adjusted the guy to 2.8. Would you attend still?" And my client said, "Look, it's still a bit too high for us." So which it was. And then his but Power reported it. He was tracking the auction, and he reported there was only one bid at 2.5. But the interesting thing is that post the auction, on post auction negotiations, the property got sold for 3.2 million. Look, you all sorts of things that outside of the underquoting scenario, outside of all that stuff playing out as well. My interest was in the fact that you're the only bidder at 2.5, and then you walk away with the property $700,000 above your bid, right? And then started looking into the background of the actual property because it caught my attention. Put my first and initial comments to my client as he sent it to me, sent me the tweet that he screenshotted. He sent it to me was, one bid and they negotiate 3.2. What a fool! Look, and I just called it because the heat of the moment, or the spur of the moment. Answering my client's message to me, WhatsApp message to me, because it's a huge jump, and you've got to really want the property. Then I started thinking a little bit more about it, and this is what we said before in a few shows from a few shows ago, Martin. We've been talking over and over again. The out of line sales, people are still paying, in my view, 10%, for completed properties. For this was a brand new build, allegedly built by a master builder. My research background on this particular individual is it's a family business, so it's more or less an owner build. So there's a few concerns about owner builders and somebody that may not be maybe here today, but not tomorrow. And therefore, your homeowner's warranty goes out the back door. Or if you want to get anything fixed up, are they in a position to fix it? So these are all the things that I started looking at and been concerned over. But then I did a little bit more digging around on this property and the recent sales in the area. And there were a couple of sales for what you would consider knockdown and rebuilds in the same street, similar blocks of land. One was on a high side, the other one's on the low side. So taking all these variables. So the value of land from my investigation, my research in there, these blocks of land, they're selling for, I would consider to be on average around the 1.6, right, 1.65. So you got to hope and pray that the value of land doesn't go down a lot lower than that when you've paid 3.2 for yours, because the build cost and the build quality and cost in conversations with my client, because he's also pretty clear about construction, we figured it would have been anywhere between 1.2 and 1.3 million to build that home with all the inclusions, all the fit outs, the whole thing. So what I can see from this and what I've deducted from this is the fact that you've got an individual that wants a new home, doesn't want to take the future risk of buying a knockdown to rebuild, and because it's there, it's finished, it's built, and doesn't want to be concerned over future supply chain issues or cost of construction or delays in construction and all this thing. So he was prepared to pay what we worked out, 10% over what it should have gone for. Then you go deeper into this listing, and then you find out that the actual individual that bought the property in 2021, which was as we were starting, the market was starting to get to heat up towards listings started dropping again. He bought in early 2021, and he bought the block for $1,365,000. And currently, the current blocks that are being sold there, or knocked down, rebuilt type of homes that have been sold there on the same street, have been selling on average for around the 1.65. So, from a developer's buyer's perspective, he bought early, so he's paid $350,000 less for the land. He's built and he's completed. He can put a finished product on the market. Somebody that wants to pay for that, that doesn't want to have potential headaches in building or construction and things not working the way they plan because of all the delays around supply chain issues. So they're prepared to pay a little bit more. So we figured that this person paid 10% above the odds, which I would call that the 10% emotion. For emotional and peace of mind and security. So that's So again, we when you've got the initial tweet, which is good, which is great information that it puts out. Mm. But when we start sort of putting a bit more meat to the background, we can see. So and I'm noticing not only here but also in the Shire and in the Upper North Shore, where people will pay premium and above the odds, they'll pay that 5 or 10% extra still, because they don't want to have the headaches. And at the end of the day, these are individuals that are not coming in with 10% deposits either. These are individuals that are cashed up, they've got cash, and they, from our experience, from our side of things, they're borrowing at most 50%.
Yeah, I call them quiet life purchasers, right? They just want to get in there, have a quiet life. And, frankly, it's not about minimizing the price. It's more about maximizing the benefit, right? And that's fundamentally different from many other people who are actually already mortgage up to the hilt, got little headroom and, an extra 100K would be a real, real issue. So it is very interesting just watching the dynamics. And like we said before, you have to go granularly. You have to really get into the detail to really understand what's going on the individual property level. You can't look at aggregate data because it's not going to tell you sufficient.
That's right. And this is what we said. There's going to be a lot of out of line. And those out of line sales are going to fall on both sides of the fence. The ones that are going to go, you're sort of going to go, crap, that's 2015 prices or 2017 prices. Or you're going to say, gee, that's pretty high for this market, and the fact that there's going to be future interest rate rises. So you're going to have, before the market balances, and I don't think we're going to see a balancing in the market, in terms of general term, how the mainstream media look at things, for another three, possibly going on to 6 months. Yep. But when you start looking at things granular, you start talk, like you say, Martin, you've got to cut out the ones that but look, I should be saying what we are noticing ourselves and the rest of our team is that people will pay for lifestyle, and you're going to get the same in apartments as well, because you're going to be gobsmacked as to why would you pay that kind of money for an apartment, knowing that there's a hell of a lot more apartments about to come on the market. But then you look at the block, you look at the you look at the position, you look at the builder. You look at all those factors and you start seeing, they just want that. It's a lifestyle choice, not an investment choice. And this is where things, start sort of, all the pieces start coming together and you get a better understanding. But look, the stuff that Parapower puts out there, it's great. And I like picking it up, and from time to time as well, and doing a bit of background search and adding on to his tweets, because it starts filling in the gaps for a lot of the people, and people start to understand what's really happening out there as opposed to what they're being told is happening.
Absolutely. No, that's very important. Now, let's just talk on the numbers a bit, because in fact, it's still pretty strong, isn't it? The listings are still there.
Look, they are. And although it's a public holiday, I'd say we're going to get a retraction in numbers tomorrow, a lot more than usual. But look, they are relatively high. So again, we're going to, it's sort of like it's going to plateau, but a very high plateau in comparison to the winter of 2021, where prices just shot up because, as we got to some record lows, historical record lows that I've ever seen, since a lot of this data started being putting up, listings started being putting up on the two portals. But now they're high, and it's a wait and see as to what happens with listings. Apartments just keep on climbing more and more. And what we are seeing that's caught my attention today was the auction, sale by auction or sale by underquoting. Victoria sale by underquoting has climbed a lot. And again, is it a question of these Victorians, these Melbournians wanting to get out before the power outages and they have to have cold showers in the middle of winter? Who's the wiser? I don't know.
Well, there's a few interesting things going on. I had a few conversations with people down in Melbourne, and there are a number of cross currents. I'll leave it at that for today, but there are a number of things going on there. And, the auction clearance rates, well, pretty low again. It is interesting just watching that go. And the fascinating thing, of course, is that the clearance rates don't tell you huge amounts, but it's very low volumes as well. Of course, now that's partly to do with the long weekend, but it's also a trend, and the trend has been going down for quite some time, right? Chances are we're not going to see a massive spike in auctions in the coming weeks, and certainly clearance rates probably quite low, and many people not now using the auction route at all to sell.
Yeah, and that's right there. And for me, the interesting thing is that there's not a lot of sales happening pre-auction. And in fact, we're getting more and more listings, going private treaty, as you said. But look, it's really watch numbers, watch the watch the your area of interest, where you want to come in, where you want to, in the type of properties that you want to go move into. But there's certainly a lot more choice. Definitely one thing for sure is that there's a lot more choice, a lot more properties that do have to sell, vendors that do want to sell, have to sell and must sell. They're staying on market a lot longer, and we're seeing second, if not third, agents take a hold of it. And that's, if that's something you like, that's when your opportunity to strike.
Absolutely. Well, let's quickly touch on a couple of articles. The first one is very interesting insofar that the Sydney mold outbreak is continuing, right?
Look, that's just happening all over. And because of the rain, we've touched on this before. It's something that now the mainstream are picked up on a lot of the stuff that we've spoken about. I've been on this subject, Martin, for over 15 years. Talking about the mold being the silent killer, right? I've forgotten how many videos I've done from 8, 10, 12, 13 years ago when these, probably from actually from as far back as 2013, 2014, when a lot of these high-rise developments started just springing up everywhere. And even before that, with the median density developments, because there was not a lot of care was taken, not a lot of emphasis was placed on mold being a silent killer. And it's one of those things that it doesn't kill you immediately. It does impact you in relation to your respiratory system, your lungs, and everything else. But it's, in my view, it's always been a silent killer. It's but it hasn't been spoken about, and it's good that the mainstream are now picking up on it, and hopefully we'll see a lot more being done in with regards to planning these high-rise developments, because you've got your wet areas, you've got your bathrooms that don't have windows, they've got mechanical ventilation, you've got your laundries, internal laundries, then you've got a cook. There's not a lot of, very little cross-flow ventilation. Tenants are expected, or occupants are expected, to keep the doors and windows open to prevent the mold from setting in. But there's only so much that you can do. I mean, a lot of property managers expect tenants to freeze to death over winter. But you saved your mold issue. But regardless of the fact that you got gangrene because of frostbites, all these things that all these things play out. It's crazy stuff, and it all comes back to the way things are built and have been built. And haphazardly built and badly designed. You got these ventilation pipes get crushed as the the levels are raised, and the brickwork in between gets put up. The brick walls get put up. So you've got all these issues, and then the mechanical ventilation. They may put in. To the building standard or the building code, but it's not adequate. It's not adequate. In many of the properties that we managed in the past, we always ripped them out, ripped the ones that were in the in the actual units, the original mechanical ventilator, and we put more powerful units in there in order to have some sort of security around that issue. Because I took that very, very seriously. And as, again, I said, I've been talking about it for about 13, 14, 15 years, if not longer.
Absolutely, Edwin. No, it's a very important point. And, it is a very fundamental thing. And again, we should say to people, if you're thinking of buying a property, it is worth making sure that you really get your own report and look at things like mold and stuff, because it's a symptom, right? It's a symptom of a construction question. And that's just we'll leave it at that, I guess. The other point, of course, the old debate about stamp duty reform is back on again. And, of course, New South Wales is now trying to get Canberra to sort of join with them to sort of solve the stamp duty riddle. But, of course, your point is, and it's worth exploring in a bit more detail, stamp duty is not the big cost. If you look at the development cycle, right, there's many other fees that are hugely more problematic than just the stamp duty question. So in a way, just moving the stamp duty problem is not going to solve the fundamental economic issue of construction.
That's correct. And we, you and I have spoken about it in the past, and when we've raised similar articles in our chats, and we said, well, look, moving over or having that option of stamp duty or paying land tax, in my view, my personal view, it's really going to only support and benefit investors. Not your first home buyers or people looking at a property as a long term residency, and all the detail hasn't been talked about as well, so we don't know how is it going to play out. And but on the surface, on prima facie, on face value, we're talking about in the office is saying that we're really going to benefit investors. But look, what I've given you is a brief overview, and it is very brief. I did a report in 2013 in one of the investment magazines, looked at the cost of construction of an apartment, and back then I was talking about the same issue as to the fact that these government the government policies around first home buyers grants and cutting cutting this or raising it from 7,000 to 14,000 to 21,000 and all these grants were not benefiting the first home buyers. In actual fact, all it was doing was raising the cost that the developers or the builders or the vendors would be asking for their properties. As you and I've talked about that at length, it just inflates the value of a property. So in this screenshot that I sent you, Martin, when you look at the cost of a parcel of land, an average block of land now across India, you'd say it's about 340 square meters, not a very big block. And if you're buying it raw, as a raw site, you're buying a couple of acres where there's going to be a subdivision, and so forth. Let's say you're buying it for $300,000, what we call raw. That's before it's gazetted as an individual block. So you got to do all your subdivisions, put in your DAs and do all the subdivisions and so forth. The civil works, component, the DA, which is civil works, curb and guttering, and getting power and drainage and everything else to that block, would cost a developer about $200,000. Then you've got council contributions, and this is the big one that needs to be addressed. Council contributions for the bastards to stamp a piece of paper, it's that you're paying as a developer or as a builder, you're paying $90,000 for the privilege of council recognizing that smaller parcel of land that you've cut up as an independent block. That's council contribute $90,000. So that's something that the government should be looking at. The state government should be seriously looking into. Then obviously you've got your stamp duty costs and purchase and holding costs on that parcel of land is $30,000 on average. Cost of construction, an average home now, you're looking at an average home being 250 square meters, anywhere between $500,000 and $600,000, depending on what you're building. Then GST, labour and materials on that is $50,000 to $60,000, which you get back as a note from the GST component when you do your taxes and so forth. You've got GST on the sale, which is the sale on the improvement post the land acquisition, is $80,000. Now, if it's a developer that's used a special purpose vehicle or has used one company to develop and then they close it off, guess what? They don't get that $80,000 back. That goes into the coffers of the government. Then you've got costs of sale, marketing and commissions, $40,000. Now, for the bank to loan you on a development, the bank want to see that you can make 20% profit overall. So when you start looking at those things, Martin, in order for the developers and the builders to make money, and everybody wants to do these, small developments or larger developments, they've got to, the trend has been, the parcels of land have become smaller, or they build duplexes. The builders adopt cheaper materials. Builders and developers cut corners, as you know. There are the roads in between the homes in the new subdivisions. I don't know if people have noticed it, but they've become narrower and narrower. Where in certain areas, I won't say where, but in the around Penrith, the rubbish trucks can't even get in. They can't even get in, if there are cars parked on one side, let alone on either side of the road, they can't get in. So the people have got to wheel the rubbish out to the, more or less, to the entrance of the estate for the rubbish truck to pick up the rubbish. And then obviously what the issue that you have now is that because of the rising cost in construction and all the required payments that they've got to make, depending on if they've got employees or subcontractors and the like. Well, we know that small and medium tier building companies are going broke. So that's what's happening. So in this mix, there's a lot that the government can do in order to make it more affordable to build and make it more affordable for people to buy in newer subdivisions. And also, to that point, if they put more pressure on the local governments, not only for a reduction of the council contributions, but also if they put more pressure on the local governments to release or to not so much water down, but to not make it as stringent in order to knock down some of these older homes and be able to put duplexes on, I'd say that there'll be a lot more affordable housing all over Sydney, not just in the subdivisions in the northwest, southwest, and west, where the infrastructure hasn't followed. Because there's a lot that could be done in existing LGAs with strong infrastructure, where in some areas, Martin, you can't subdivide your block. You can't have a dual occupancy or subdivide into two title properties unless your each block is 550 square meters. So that's basically the old quarter acre blocks. Give me a part of Sydney where you can still get quarter acre blocks other than the mountains. On average, the blocks around Sydney are around 650 in the older, more established sites. And there are other councils where you could do a duplex on 580 square meters. So there's a lot of discrepancies, and there's a lot of things that the government, the state government, can come in and be forceful on in order to for developers and builders to build duplexes or to build small, medium density developments, villas and townhouses, as opposed to high-rise development.
Absolutely. And the point, of course, Edwin, is that New South Wales government might chase the stamp duty dream, as it were, because that seems like a simple, thing that will solve the problem, although I don't think it would. It would just change the problem. But these issues, which are much more structural in nature, literally, bigger numbers, and they actually could make some changes that would make a significant difference to the affordability of housing, and that's the critical point. But, of course, people don't want to have the joined-up thinking, and they don't want you to have those big debates, partly, I suspect, because there's a political minefield in the middle of it.
That's right. You've got so many levels of government and so many public servants just trying to keep they create issues and create disputes and create barriers and obstacles in order to justify the position. And as you and I have been saying for a long, long time, the only ones that have, the industries that have benefited from, other than IT and the medical sector in a lot of cases, the only other sector that's benefited from this pandemic has been the public servants, because they're the only ones that have got a wage rise. True.
No, that is true, unfortunately. Well, we better get to the tip of the week, because we're already over our allotted time. But this is quite an important little one, isn't it? And going back to the mould thing again.
Yeah, look, it's something that we've experimented with just about everything. I've even called in specialists, mould specialists, mould remover specialists to deal with a lot of issues in the high-rise developments in properties that we've managed over the years. But look, something that we've we put together over 20 years of dealing with mold at different levels and in different places. Very straightforward. Don't use bleach. Bleach just does not kill the mold. It's just it's useless. What you do is you get white vinegar. You get white vinegar, four parts white vinegar to one part methylated spirits. You mix it together in a spray bottle. Spray it over the mold. Let it dry, and then you wipe that affected area where you can see the black spores, the black or green mold that appears, where there's a concentration. This is just to clean it, basically to clean it or clean the surface. And if it's to do with ventilation more so than structural issues with moisture coming in through the roof or through the wall cavities, this is just sort of surface mold. So you spray it on, let it dry, and then once it's dry, you get a cloth, you spray that mixture on that solution on the cloth, and then you wipe away that black that surface to wipe that mold, and you use a damp damp cloth so that the dead spores, that you're not breathing in dead spores. Make sure you wear a good mask, not those silly crappy things that people are wearing around thinking that they're going to be protected from coronavirus, but get some proper mask, a proper mask so you can do it and it won't affect you. Once you've done all that, then the same solution, you spray it all around the room, particularly inside wardrobes, if it's in the lounge room, if that mold's appeared around the windows around in the lounge room area or the living areas, spray the carpet with it, spray the furniture with it, any surface spray, it'll dry. The smell will dissipate. That's what the methylated spirits is there for, to help aerate and dry the and you don't get that smell of vinegar. And it works a treat, Martin. It really, really works a treat. And again, as I said, the thing that you don't use is you don't use starch because bleach because it just doesn't work.
Very important there, and I think it's something which people should take really seriously. As we've said, mold can be very, very bad in terms of health, but it can be treated. Here's a simple way. Edwin, that's a very good piece of advice, I think, and a great tip for the week. Thank you for that.
No worries. And again, look, if it's a high concentration, then this is just for surface mold. This is just for surface mold. If you see it building up in your ceilings, it's generally there's a roof leak or in coming through, very strongly and making your paint bubble up. The moisture's coming through the wall, through the cavity there in the walls, whether that be brick or partition walls, brick veneer, or just timber frame and gyprock. So then obviously this is just a temporary solution. This is just for general cleaning as opposed to dealing with structural issues in the building. Yep. That's the tip.
Thank you very much, Edwin. Well, a very important conversation again tonight. And I see you didn't get the gong from the Queen, nor did I. But nevertheless, we'll go on making our shows and we'll do it all again next week, huh?
Well, yeah, look, I'm hoping that she... I reckon she'll still be here for another 5-10 years. I've got an opportunity to get one of those, for her to, knight me or something.
Sir Edwin has a certain ring to it. Thank you, Edwin. See you then later. Take care. Bye-bye.